Hello and welcome to Business Daily from the BBC. I'm Manuela Zaragoza. Coming up, it ranks up there with caviar as one of the world's most costly foodstuffs.
It is an extraordinary flavour, isn't it? Served with a fresh, chilled glass of sake. What could be finer?
Endangered European glass eels are ending up on Asian dinner plates, and it's fueling a multi-billion dollar illegal trade.
People care about elephants and rhinos and pangolins, which are African or Asian species. But here we have a European species that is really under threat.
That's all here in Business Daily from the BBC. This being the BBC, you can't do a programme that refers to the natural world without mentioning the legendary naturalist David Attenborough.
Our planet may be home to 30 million different kinds of animals and plants, each individual locked in its own lifelong fight for survival. Everywhere you look, on land or in the ocean, there are extraordinary examples of the lengths living things go to stay alive.
But one species appears to be losing that battle to stay alive, the European glass eel. Warnings of its demise come as the WWF reports that Earth is losing biodiversity at a rate seen only during mass extinctions. It's all down to exploding human consumption. Marine freshwater species are particularly at risk, the WWF says, and one species that's particularly sensitive to this destructive whirlwind of economic development and global trade is the European glass eel. It's now on the UN's list of critically endangered species. Exports of glass eels from the EU are banned, but illegal trafficking is rife, I should say, with most of the demand coming from the Far East, where they're matured in farms and end up on people's plates as a culinary delicacy. Some campaigners now estimate that as much as half of all Chinese eel production comes from illegally imported European eels. But while Chinese demand is growing quickly, historically, the biggest market for eel has been Japan. So what's the appeal? Business Daily's Ed Butler went to Hiroshima in Japan to find out.
So you find me in a well-known eel restaurant in Hiroshima tonight. It's called Unazuki, and I'm with the local owner. What's your name, madam?
Kono Chiyomi desu.
Miss Chiyomi Kono. I'm in charge of cooking.
Good to be with you. So I'm face-to-face with some absolutely gorgeous-looking eel covered with teriyaki sauce. Unagi, as they call it here. What is the appeal?
Eel consists of an ideal balance of nutrition. If you eat meal, you have to eat also salad as well. But when you eat eel, it includes vitamin and all the necessary nutrition. So this is really ideal food and very popular.
And it also has another special property. Apparently, women in this country were known to prepare it for their husbands to inspire passion in the bedroom. Is that true?
So I think that is really possible because eel, it includes lots of stamina and so it makes you more energetic. So especially in summer when people get tired, eel works you to become better.
Tell me, has the price varied? Has the price gone up? I mean, they say that there's a shortage of eel around the world. Have you noticed that in the prices you pay?
Yes, especially this summer, the price of eel went up very much because of the shortage. But now we are becoming entering winter, and the price has gone down and becomes stable. In my restaurant, we provide eel from Ishiki in Mikawa area in Nagoya.
So this is Japanese eel. It's not coming from abroad.
So this kokusan de. Yeah, that's right. So we provide Japanese eel, and so we provide good unagi. So the price of our restaurant is rather high, expensive, but it worth.
It's worth it. It's worth it. Yeah, I should say that the plate in front of us cost about $15 each. So this is an expensive plate of food, but I'm looking forward to it. Thank you very much, madam, for having us and for serving this amazing plate. Okay, let's tuck in. Well, having tasted some of this eel, and it is an extraordinary flavour, isn't it? It's obviously incredibly fresh, but it's very rich. Served with a fresh, chilled glass of sake. What could be finer? Cheers.
Ed Butler there, eating hopefully sustainably sourced eel. Part of the problem with dwindling eel populations is that no one's quite sure how the European glass eel spawns, so they're impossible to breed. And that makes them particularly valuable to traffickers who want baby eels to mature in farms in Asia. Here's eel expert Florian Stein.
For now, it is impossible to breed European eels in captivity. They have succeeded for the Japanese eel, which is quite similar to the European eel, and they succeeded to mature the eels in captivity and to get larvae from these matured eels. But the bottleneck is that they don't know how to feed them. So you have tiny millimeter-sized larvae, but we don't have a clue what they eat.
And that's because it's just a very mysterious animal, the eel.
Yeah, the eel is believed to be born in the Sargasso Sea, which is just a part of the ocean close to the Bermuda Triangle. And, well, the smallest larvae were caught like in a few hundred meters depth at a certain point, and scientists just have to assume that's where they actually hatch, even though no one has ever witnessed matured eels or eels that met and laid eggs.
Now, it's estimated a quarter of all glass eels in Europe are trafficked illegally to markets outside the European Union, even though the European Union banned their export in 2010. But selling them within the EU remains legal. So how does that work in practice? Back to Florian Stein, who you just heard from. He's been contracted by the UN to research the illegal trade in European glass eels.
Well, it is believed that one of the causes for the decline in eels might be the massive trade to Asia before the ban. So like from the 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s, eel was legally traded to Asia, even though the species was declining. So the decision was made, trade to Asia is something we can stop really easily, and that might have quite an effect on the stock status. And if you compare like the scales of what is farmed in Asia and what is farmed in Europe, it's a big difference. It's more than 200,000 tons of eels farmed in Asia compared to 4,000 to 6,000 tons farmed in Europe. So the European demand, the legal demand, is really small. And therefore, the EU didn't see the point to stop that business within Europe.
But in the meantime, has this illegal trade trafficking out from the EU to outside the EU, has that been increasing?
Well, that's something I try to find out right now. So if you just look on seizure data and police operation data, you will see increasing numbers. But at the same time, if you look at the trade levels before the ban came into force and compare to the trade levels you see right now, you could come to the conclusion that it hasn't really ever stopped. It just continued, even though the trade ban was in place. And now we're just discovering that it has been never stopped. So it's really hard to say if it is an increase in trade or if it's just an increase in enforcement efforts.
And how much is it worth, this trade?
My latest estimation for the end product that is actually then being sold to the consumer. So the value of all the eel products that are produced from 100 tons of glass eels might be between 1 billion and 4 billion euros.
Well, so they're really quite valuable animals.
Yes, exactly.
Tell us how it works.
Okay, so the poachers or even legally fishes the glass eels in Europe, he will sell the kilogram of glass eel for a few hundred euros to a trader. The customer in Asia, the eel farmer, he will pay probably 1,500, 2,000 or even 6,000 euros per kilogram glass eel. So you can see there's a high margins in between the fishermen and the arrival in Asia. So there's lots of money to make for people who actually transport the eels into Asia from Europe.
And where are the problems in Europe? Where are they being trafficked from? Do we know?
The main catch areas in Europe, France, which accounts for 75% of the European catch, followed by Spain, UK and Portugal. In recent years, most eels that were intercepted at airports came from Spain. But even there, you can't be sure that they were caught in Spain or if they were caught in France and transported to Spain for export. I believe that the amount that is trafficked from France is much higher than it is reflected in seizure data.
When it comes to prosecution, do the traffickers who are caught, do they get punished properly or do they get let off? What happens?
To my knowledge, so far, no one has successfully been prosecuted. I know that a lot of people who had been caught with suitcases packed with eels have not been prosecuted. So overall, it's quite an unsatisfying situation.
Suitcases packed with eels, how does that work? Surely they should be living in water. How does it work?
So in general, there's two methods that you can use to get the eels to Asia. The one method is in suitcases. As long as eels are wet but not underwater, they can breathe through their skin. So if you just keep them wet, they can survive, I think, up to 36 hours in such a bag. And then, well, the smugglers just take the suitcases, check them in at the airport and fly to Hong Kong, Beijing or wherever.
If this trade is not checked, what happens? What's the future look like for the glass eel?
If you just take into account the potential impact on the stock, so it is a quarter of the stock that is trafficked every year, it's quite obvious that that will have a huge effect. But what worries me most is actually that in case of the eel, it's a European species that origins from Europe and is stolen from European territory. And European societies don't really care about it. So people care about elephants and rhinos and pangolins, which are African or Asian species. But here we have a European species that is really under threat, and it is our responsibility to take care of it.
Florian Stein. Well, it's not just demand in the Far East that's to blame, though. Land and waterway development in Europe has also played a role in the dwindling number of European glass eels. Andrew Carr is chairman and founder of the Sustainable Eel Group here in the UK.
What happened, man started to introduce the technologies of draining the wetlands and controlling the water flows of rivers. And to begin with, the technology was pretty basic, and the eel was able to get past it and around these barriers. But here we are now in 2018, and we have over a million obstructions in the rivers of Europe. We have 25,000 hydropower stations and so many water pumps we can't count them. And eels and these barriers and turbine blades just do not get on. And progressively, this has had a massive negative impact on eel population.
So now, how endangered are they?
Well, if I tell you they're two levels above a panda, it's called critically endangered. It's one step short of extinction on the IUCN scale.
And that's globally, is it?
Yeah, no, there are 16 populations that do the same thing, have the same life cycle as the European eel. That is, they have an ocean life and a freshwater life. And when we talk about the eel in the context of Europe, we talk about the European eel, Anguilla anguilla, and it's one population for the whole of Europe and North Africa.
Okay, so but is the eel endangered in, for example, Asia? Is it endangered in the Americas?
Yes, but they're not nearly so defined. And the information generally on eel is very, very small or low or unrecorded. The thing about the eel is its life cycle. It has this most extraordinary life cycle. We think, but we've never witnessed it, we think it's born in the Bermuda Triangle, in the Sargasso Sea. And billions are literally born, and they float across the Atlantic on the currents, and they're making for the great Atlantic west-flowing rivers of Europe, in particular the Bay of Biscay. And they take a couple of years to float across the Atlantic, we think. And they then arrive in these estuaries, and they try and go up the estuaries and up the river systems to put on weight. And then when they've matured, they then make the return journey. And we know through satellite tagging, this goes via the Azores and then on again to the Sargasso Sea.
They're big travellers.
They are incredible travellers, not just in nature, But also now, thanks to this trafficking problem, man flies them around the world in a most extraordinary manner as well.
So when did the trafficking of eels become a problem? Presumably it's linked entirely to its the dwindling numbers.
Sort of. I think several things have conspired. The fashion of eating eel has really taken off in Asia. It was always very strongly eaten, but now it's very, very strongly eaten, particularly in China, South Korea and Japan. They're the great eel eaters. And what's happened is the same technology of blocking and draining wetlands and damming rivers has happened across the globe. When it was with wood, eels could sort of get round as the wood rotted. But now with concrete and steel everywhere, it's just too efficient. And we've so disrupted their migration that they can't get up the rivers. Then add to that this overfishing and in particular trafficking, and you have an absolute recipe for a disaster. And that's what we're in.
I was speaking there to Andrew Carr of the Sustainable Eel Group here in the UK, and contrast what he says with the way it was in Victorian times here, when eels used to be a staple of Londoners' diet. Back then, they were swimming so plentifully in the River Thames that they became a poor man's hearty meal. That's it from this edition of Business Daily. Today's producer was Edwin Lane. Business Daily is back again tomorrow. Thanks for downloading Business Daily. Before I go, here's a recommendation for you. The Outlook podcast from the BBC World Service, where each episode centres around a powerful personal story. One recent episode featured Lisa Brennan-Jobs, the daughter of Steve Jobs. She spoke to Outlook about the awkward and complicated relationship she had with her father, the founder of Apple, and how he went from denying her to a reconciliation, with a little help from U2's Bono along the way. Hear her extraordinary story and others like hers 5 times a week on the Outlook podcast. Just search for BBC Outlook wherever you found this podcast.